Fight!
Welcome to New Game Plus. You're listening to a retro gaming podcast where three guys spend 7 days playing one old game and then we talk about it. My name's Dustin.
My name's Kenny.
My name is Nolan.
And then this is episode 75. And this is a special episode because, not because of what you think, but it is a Patreon pool episode.
Yes.
Which it's our lovely and dedicated patrons who are responsible for the game that we played this week.
Sure.
Well, I mean, they're responsible for the fact that we're playing it. They're not responsible for the game itself.
And I'll just go ahead and say it now, but this is patently my favorite episode of all time. We are going
already,
to be...
Already? Before we've even jumped in?
Already. We're going to be talking about the game Final Fantasy VII, but to properly prepare us for that task, let's first talk about all of the other Final Fantasies. So,
okay.
The three of us have played... yeah, we're going to... One by one, we're just going to walk through it entirely. No, the three of us have played many of these games, many of the games from this iconic series. In fact, a few years back, we all started the series together, right? And
we
kind of went through the first few together at the same time.
Yeah, and me and Kenny dropped off while Dustin pretty much went through the whole series, if I remember correctly.
But y'all at least got to like three. I mean, we played the first few together and then dropped off at various times. But out of all the Final Fantasy games that you've played, which is your favorite and why? Final Ooh. Fantasy VII is in its own category, which, you know, where it belongs.
Outside of VII, which is our favorite?
Outside of VII, which is all of our favorites, whether you want it to be or not. No, that's okay. Fine. But we're not including Final Fantasy VII in this. We will give that its own platform in just a few moments.
Okay.
So just considering all the other Final Fantasies, and you don't have to put in too much thought. I'm not asking your absolute favorite. What is one of your favorites and why?
Still a really hard question. There's so many good ones. Okay, I haven't played them all. I have played most of them. And out of those, my favorite one is Final Fantasy IX.
IX, so good.
Yes.
Why do you like IX?
Okay, so IX, I mean, I'm probably just quoting like people who have stated this before who know better than me, but it's a true fantasy game. Like, it's not futuristic. It's actually more like a medieval feel to it. Swords, magic, which that's a lot of Final Fantasy, but... just the world that it's built around, and it's actually like cartoon characters. That's not even what they're called. They're cartoonish. They're not like made to be like these really cool looking dudes.
Like Final Fantasy VIII. They went the opposite end of the spectrum.
Like 8 or 10 even. Just right in the middle of all the like realism that the series was going towards, they just made this game that was like supposed to be on PS2 or actually Super Nintendo maybe. Because it came out... No, not Super Nintendo. I don't know.
7 was supposed to be on Super Nintendo.
That's
and
right.
It got switched over.
Well, 9 comes out before the PS2, and it's just like it like kills and is one of the top selling PlayStation 1 games. It's so good.
It is so good.
But you level in this one. You level your like magic and your gear, like your armor and stuff. Like you level it. It gets stronger as you level or something like that. And it was such a cool mechanic. And the soundtrack is the best.
Soundtrack is incredible. The artwork is fun. The story is great. The character Steiner, like that.
Steiner's so freaking good.
You've got Steiner's. It ain't Vivi. You've got one of the. You've got the best. I'll just go with that.
So
you've
much
got
character
the best.
Development.
Wow.
Ah.
You've got the best character in Final Fantasy. Vivi. Who doesn't like Vivi?
It's a bold claim.
So, all right. Final Fantasy IX for you, Nolan. What about for you, Kenny?
I gotta swing the pendulum to the other side and say Final Fantasy I.
Okay.
That's
seriously.
That's cool. That is far over there.
Yeah, but partly. You guys both have actually played more of the series than I am, though I'm very familiar. A few of the games I haven't played, but I have seen played through. And so I know quite a few of them, but personally, I spent a lot of time playing Final Fantasy I. It's one that was just really heavy on the nostalgia front for me, and I think was so important in launching the rest of this series and in just kind of establishing the direction that a lot of that genre was going to go.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
It was just an important game. It was creative. It had some of the problems of games of that time, a little bit grindy at points and whatever else, but fun. There were things to explore and learn and just really intelligently done. And so for an early RPG, hands down, one of the best. Obviously, you know, Chrono Trigger's in that conversation for games of that era, though slightly different. But just so good, and I spent so much time playing it that I have a hard time not going there and thinking to the roots. That's obviously if you exclude 7.
One is good, and we played it as a part of our podcast. A few months ago, because I'll always remember it because I watched Kenny play it IRL as it was the week of his wedding, and literally the day of his wedding at like midnight, he's playing Final Fantasy 1, which just is one of the few reasons I love this guy.
He's great.
Final Fantasy 10 is probably my second favorite Final Fantasy game of all time. It's PlayStation 2, which was the system that I grew up on and absolutely loved. I think Final Fantasy 10 is a graphical masterpiece. What they tried to do in 8, they perfected with 10. 8 is one of my least favorite. 10, they took that kind of more realism in graphics and in character design, and I think did it really well. It's thick in story, and it's about like real things like identity and reality and purpose. And so I like that. I love the cast of characters. A lot of people will give it crap because of the voice acting, and they've got some merit with that because there's some really cheesy dialogue, and Tidus's laugh is iconic. Gosh.
That guy's really bad at voice acting.
I'm a little surprised you didn't say Tactics. I know you've raved about that game.
I liked Tactics. Good. Tactics Advance, I didn't, but those are fun, but I'm not even including those.
That's fair.
In
they're a different kind of game
Final
altogether.
Fantasy games.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm doing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12, 13,
15.
Which none of us have played.
But and then it's got my favorite leveling system with the sphere grid. I love the complexity within that. And. Anyways, tons of fun. So Final Fantasy 9, Final Fantasy 1, Final Fantasy 10, all great Final Fantasies, but not the greatest Final Fantasy.
I mean...
But not the greatest Final Fantasy.
I feel like Nolan's about to say something.
He's not.
And we're
going to
get a little drama up in here.
It's just not my favorite. It's Dustin's favorite.
It's and it doesn't have to be everybody's favorite, but they have to understand that it is the best. So Final Fantasy VII is our retro game of the week, which we are going to talk about now.
Overview.
What's Final Fantasy VII? I've never heard of it.
Final Fantasy VII, Nolan, thank you for asking, is a role-playing game, an RPG, a JRPG, that was released in 1997, which, ready to blow your mind, is only 10 years after the start of the Final Fantasy series. Like, they're already at 7 status, 10 years into
the... Yeah, that's crazy. That's also 20 years ago. Does that not make you guys feel old?
I'm the youngest, so not really.
Okay, makes me feel old.
Here's the thing. I haven't improved that much in 10 years. And they went from Final Fantasy 1, incredible game, to Final Fantasy 7 in a matter of 10 years.
That is crazy.
When you compare it like that, it really is leaps and bounds different in terms of video gaming and what they were able to do. Like,
yeah.
That era was amazing.
So amazing. And Final Fantasy 7 was released for the PlayStation on 3 separate discs, which is fun. Ooh. And it was developed by Square. It follows the story of a 21-year-old mercenary named Cloud Strife, and whether or not you've played the game before, you've seen him. He's got that iconic spiky blonde hair, and he's got the biggest sword in video game history. Obviously,
he's the face of Final Fantasy.
Final Fantasy. He shows up in the Kingdom Hearts games as well, right?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, definitely iconic. Let's be real. It's a big sword. It's not the biggest sword ever. Video game characters have wielded some ridiculously big swords in some
it's
places.
It's no shard blade.
That like are like obscenely outrageous, but it's definitely iconic. That Buster sword look is just like classic.
Let's definitely get caught up on the swords in this whole conversation. But in Final Fantasy VII, Sephiroth has the biggest sword, which might be the biggest sword in video gaming history, but... Back to Cloud. He's got a lot of sass. He's very emo, and he's this brooding character. As with all Final Fantasy stories, it's what starts as a pretty small scale event blows up into a cataclysmic, world changing scenario. So that's kind of the setup. Do either of you have much history with this game? I don't know if we've actually talked about this. I know you played at least some of it in the past, but what is your story with this?
So I've played and beat it when I was maybe 12 years old. I borrowed it from my friend Zach, who is obsessed with the game. He gave me the strategy guide, and that was my first time to actually play a game like this. That may have been my first Final Fantasy game, and yeah, it was a while back, but I haven't played it since. So this was a big throwback for me.
And then Kenny,
I've played a lot of this game. This was one of those like define entire summers of your childhood. You know, more than 1 year. As you just jump into a video game and play it nonstop. Definitely classic. One we spent lots of time on. And then I have fond memories of going back and playing it again later during my undergrad years, Dustin, with you.
Oh, yeah. The whole debacle.
Playing through most of it again. And that was fun. And I know you're still salty that I haven't finished. But... Save my save points, and we'll clean it up someday.
Kenny, by now, if you've listened to this podcast, you know Kenny's personality, and so Kenny let me watch him play through this entire game, albeit not for the first time, but still, it's an enjoyable thing for me to watch someone play my favorite game, and he played through it all the way, gets down into the last area, and then refuses to fight the final boss because somewhere in his mind he got it into his head that he was going to try to rig the game to where he could in every battle have this lucky sevens attack, which is you just have to manipulate so many factors and get really lucky for it to happen in the first place. And Kenny's whole process
was... You can make it happen consistently.
Theoretically, we don't know that. It would have he would have had to run from like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of battles consecutively and not and,
thousands
and just and then use an enemy skill thousands maybe. Anyways, I don't want to talk about it because that's what he did and didn't beat it. So I watched him play for weeks and weeks and weeks, and then he just refused to beat the game.
I wasn't done yet.
People love you, Kenny.
But none more than he loves himself. My first connection with Final Fantasy VII was when I was in middle school, sixth grade, rode my bike over to Logan Smith's house and went up into his bedroom, and he is playing this video game that I've never seen before, and it looked very intriguing, and so he let me play some of it there while I was at his house, and then he was such a good friend that he let me borrow the game and his strategy guide, which I never gave back.
Ooh, and Logan, if you're listening.
In fact, I didn't give the game back for the longest time until I got a copy of my own, like late into high school, I think. I felt bad. I still had his copies.
And, you ruined and Logan's childhood.
But Logan made mine. So
it all worked out for the best.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Let me just say, I understand that Final Fantasy VII probably in and of itself is not the greatest game of all time. It is, I think it could arguably be one of the greats, but I would definitely not.
Such a hard thing to even argue. Yeah. I would not put it on
everybody else as the greatest. But the reason in part why it is so great to me is because it was my first, I had played other games. I'd even played some other action kind of RPGs. I think I had played A Link to the Past, really liked that. But really what was my entryway into gaming was Final Fantasy VII. It was my entry into RPGs, Final Fantasy VII. It was my entry into like long-term, like pausing the game, playing in the morning, pausing the game, going to school, and then coming back to like an overheated PlayStation and then playing some more.
It was your entry into adulthood?
Yeah, like, it was my entry into cross-dressing. You have to play the game. But
like, Dustin's coming-of-age story is Final Fantasy VII.
It really is. And I remember so much vivid. I don't have a good memory, but I remember vividly so many so many things about those early days playing that game. I remember zooming through the dialogue so my parents wouldn't see the cuss words.
Yeah, and Barrett's language.
And I thought Barrett's language was bad. Wait until you get Sid Highwind later, and he just goes off the charts. But mom listens to this podcast. Thank you for letting me play Final Fantasy VII, even with cuss words. It turned me into a better man, not a worse man.
Is T for and teen?
It was teen, but I mean, it's completely mild compared to many other video
games. Way to go, mom.
Oh, absolutely.
But I focused on the characters, Mom. I focused on how to be a better person. I focused on how to lay my life down for the team, not on how to
mini games. It was all about the mini games.
It was all about the mini games.
Seriously, though, that's a huge deal.
Let's go into the gameplay. There's a lot to talk about in the structure and the setup and the gameplay of this game, and so let's do that now.
Gameplay.
So, Final Fantasy VII follows the pretty basic and common RPG layout, the template. In fact, it kind of became the template that people compared future games to, like Final Fantasy RPGs and then others. I know that I would be like, oh, there's no like random encounter battles and like transitions when I would get to a different game. Like 13, when I first played it, I was very critical of it because I like Final Fantasy's layout of how you go through RPGs. So you have random encounters, you have your party, and they each have their own unique, like, you know, play style, and then you can swap them out. There's just a bunch of replayability in the gameplay of Final Fantasy in general, and 7, I feel like, really set the, like, just the staple for future games.
We've got to remember that Final Fantasy VII is coming off of the back of one of the other great Final Fantasy games of all time. Like, 6 is widely considered one of the best by a lot of Final Fantasy fans. And when everyone thought, you know, you can't one-up this, it's with the storytelling, with the gameplay, with the mechanics and everything, how are you going to beat this?
Yeah.
And then they come out with Final Fantasy VII. A lot of the gameplay mechanics and structure that they had in the earlier games, they still used in 7, but they kind of just enhanced and improved.
Throughout the series, they've done a great job of being willing to stick with stuff that works and that they know people like, but then add something unique each game that is novel and different and different looks and style. And they've done a really great job of kind of navigating that, like what stays the same and what stays different, and ended up developing what I think is arguably one of the most fun, maybe not the most intriguing or most robust or anything else, but one of the most fun magic systems in games of all time. So the materia system is absolutely iconic, and if you're not familiar with the game, weapons and armor that you collect throughout the game have empty slots in them that you can take these materia that have a really key place in the story as well in terms of what's going on, and slot them in, level those things up, and they become progressively better, and you can also link them together to get different effects, and so you have lots of really intriguing choices about, you know, hey, do I want this spell to be cast and hit everybody? Do I want it to just be a focused kind of damage? Do I want, you know, healing versus a attack kind of stuff? Do I want elemental damage versus other kind of stuff? It's just a very simple, but with enough complexity and options that you can do lots and lots of very fun things with it.
Yeah, like super simple to get into. Like if you want to cast a fire spell within a battle, you put your fire materia into a slot on your weapon or on your armor. Simple. And then you've got that opportunity to cast it. Or so complex that, like Kenny said, some of the armor have linked slots. And so you can place one materia in one slot, a different materia in a different slot, and they will work together to do something unique. Not all the time, but there are some that you can... like there's one that you can make cast multiple times, or when you get hit, then it casts, then it sets off the other one. There are a few different combinations that made this one of the better systems. It's not my favorite system, but the materia system is a lot of fun. You don't get to play around with it as much within the first few hours. Like this week, we probably didn't get to experience it that
much. End game is really where it starts to shine.
Yeah. Until you get open world and really start getting better armor and really some of the more unique materia, it's not like especially fun, and then really crazy and huge, you know, late game. But you get to at least do some of that, and you get some of the really fun ones. You get to sport the enemy skill materia, which is super creative, and that you can pick up early.
You don't get to capture enemy skills, really. Maybe like
not
one
many.
Or two.
There's just a handful, but not many. but still it exists and it's something you can support. And there's, you know, some of those creative things, and you do get access to it early so that you can start to learn that system.
Yeah.
And yeah. and use those things in fights. And
another huge thing that's in this gameplay that was introduced really to gaming in general was like how iconic summons are, in that the cutscene that happens and just how awesome you feel when you
almost ridiculously so though.
But yeah, that's played this Knights of the Round.
Any amount of time, you got super hyped for getting your Knights of the Round materia, and then you wasted literally hours of your life just watching that
yeah,
scene.
But the first
play
time
out.
You throw it, you feel like a boss, and
oh
it was so
goodness.
Worth everything.
Absolutely.
When it goes for 5 minutes of the, I think, 13 knights coming across your screen and not only destroying the enemy, but I think like it destroys worlds and the universe while they do it.
It's kind of ridiculous.
It's like, wait,
it really
should they
is.
Still be alive right now? Everyone
yeah,
should
right. like, should anybody? No, but that being said, Knights of the Round, the majority of people in a playthrough are not going to get this.
Extra content.
Yeah. This is after you get the gold chocobo. This is after you get the airship. This is after you do so many things. So
you know you're going to do it all, though. Like, this game is that kind of game. It sucks you in, and you can't help but do all the side content.
No, you're not if you're going playing to do this that. Blind, and you are, or like when it first came out, you have no clue about golden chocobos. So let's take a step back. Chocobos are not new to the series. They've been in for many games now, early on even. And so you've got your basic yellow chocobo, but this is the first game where you can get different breeds and different colors of chocobo. And so you can... And so much fun. So talking about side quests, this is one of them. You can get and raise chocobos, keep them in a chocobo stable that you can access as soon as you get out into the real world, into the overworld. And you can breed and train chocobo. You train chocobo at the Gold Saucer, which is this huge amusement park where you can race chocobos. And you race them time and time again, and they improve. Anyway, so you can do a certain amount of breeding with certain amount of nuts and like carrots and plants and things like that, and you can get different colors. You can get a blue chocobo that can traverse rivers. You can get a green chocobo that can traverse mountains. You can breed those two together at the highest level and get a black chocobo, which is a mountain and river chocobo. And then if you've got a strategy guide and that's all, you can take a supreme black chocobo with a supreme yellow standard chocobo, mate them together with the right nut and cross your fingers and save and reload multiple times, and then you might get a gold chocobo, which can go Gosh. Anywhere at any time and is super powerful, which is also used to get to this round island and get the materia Knights of the Round.
You know, pretty much everybody got the gold chocobo. It's a lot of work, but no. If you didn't actually beat the game. I'm gonna stand by that.
That I haven't beaten the game.
So many awesome side quests. It's just
but
unreal.
Like, that's another point. There's so much content in this game, like extra story content. Like after the game, you're going to keep playing it a lot, and you can replay it if you wanted to. Also, it's just like
huge.
They went overboard
content.
With how much gameplay is available for the hardcore gamer, but also you can experience it just as it is. And
like enough
it.
Story content that by the time we spent. A pretty good amount of time playing through this game this week. Like, realistically, I don't know how far you guys got, but my goal was like get to the overworld, you know,
That's
get
a good
onto
guess.
The map. And that literally almost feels like just playing through the prologue of the game,
right?
Because everything changes, but that's like hours of gameplay, tons of cutscenes, tons of character backstory. Just for you to get to the place where it really feels like everything has been established and the game is really starting. You're not even to an overworld map into that point. And that amount of complexity is part of what made this game so great. They didn't just make good characters and fight scene and battle scene and interesting magic system. They put it into a world that was good enough that they made a movie about it. And it wasn't terrible. You know?
Well, okay, so let's do this, because I just mentioned in an overview, but So here's the story just a little bit more, which will take us into characters, because that's another reason why this game is just so good. You've got this cast of Absolutely. Characters that really up until this point, once again, 6 and even 4, they've got some iconic characters, but it's not the full cast. In 7, it's like, this is a killer cast that are all unique. So Cloud, our main character, our protagonist, he joins an eco-terrorist group named Avalanche. And they're setting out, this is how it begins, to thwart the plans of this mega corporation known as Shinra. And when Shinra finds out about them and they strike back, that's when everything just falls apart and goes crazy. And so within that, it begins building on top of that. You find out that there's this evil force that is present, that is returned, that is back. You start finding out about Cloud's backstory, and it kind of just unravels in that. But in that, you meet these characters along the way. And so within the first few minutes, you meet Barrett Wallace, who is this big black man with a missing hand, and instead of his hand,
gun for an arm.
A gun, which amazing, and he's like this Mr. T character, right? So like he's
loud just, and boisterous, yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Over
and
the top.
He's leading Avalanche at the time, and so you do a task with him, and then soon after you meet up with Tifa. And she's the owner of a bar called Seventh Heaven, but she's a fighter too. And she fights with her fists. She's got both hands. Her and Cloud actually have some history together and some kind of maybe romance. Yeah, it just depends on what happens in the game. After a series of events, you fall down into a chapel in a flower bed, and you meet a girl named Aerith. Or Aerith.
Aerith.
Which, just based on your translation and the romanization of the name, you might call her a different thing altogether. But she is a sweet girl that no one better ever hurt her feelings.
Oh, wow.
But she's kind of magic heavy. She's got a history of who she is and what kind of people she's a part of. And she's got this staff where she fights. And then that's really your team for a good portion of the first disc. That might have even been who you were with.
Sure. That's my favorite party, I think.
You pick up Red 13 fairly early.
You pick up Red 13 before you leave Midgar?
Yeah, before you're to the overworld.
Okay. Yeah, so Red 13 is not a human. He is a wolf-like creature that is red. And he's got his own story. A few hours later, you pick up Kate Sith, and
so you got the jokes.
He is he's universally hated. I don't know why. He never really bothered me.
Terrible.
He's not good.
You never kept him in your party and used him seriously.
He's a joke character for sure. He's a joke.
And then late game, later in disc one, you get Cid Highwind, who is this old gruff pilot, he fights with a lance, kind of your dragoon character for the game, but just a totally different archetype for
the diversity of archetypes, but then characters that go with it is so well done.
And it's unusual, because in the past you're like Kane was that dragoon type character, and they had, you know, it was just a different thing altogether. The characterization of this. So that's the cast of characters, or is it?
There's extra characters, which I think is brilliant the way they do it. It's not like, oh, here's some more cool characters. You play their backstory to recruit them, and so it's like a giant detour from the main quest, but it's so welcomed when it happens, and you want to see and find out what happens. Like Yuffie is one of those, and Vincent. It's just so good. There's so many different characters to really get to know, because each one has a unique backstory.
Two really amazing characters that are totally missable characters, but that you can pick up and bring as a part of your team, and that are really amazing. I could go on and on about the characters, about the story, but I want to know what you guys thought about the story, at least as much as you played this week. If we can kind of contain it there, I think that would be most interesting. The gameplay, the mechanics, the battle system, the limit breaks. We didn't get any summons yet, right?
That's I did not.
Yeah, no, I didn't either, and I played much further than you. No, I did. Yeah, I did. I just didn't use them. And just some of that. So, what did you guys think? Did y'all have to grind much? I know that's a typical RPG type requirement, yeah. but Within our limited play this week, you probably didn't have to do too much.
Yeah, there's some of that, but you don't need to do a lot, especially because of the sort of role of the part of the game that we were playing, that sort of whole introductory section, which really sounds short, but is quite lengthy on its own. Like, this is a game with lots of content if you're going through and playing it all. You've got plenty of people to fight that you don't feel like you ever have to go, like, grind. But once you get to the overworld, that's a little more common. You know, you want to go level up or get some experience or learn something new or whatever else. It's more natural to do it at that point. And so that didn't feel too heavy. There's times in the intro that it almost feels a little heavy on the story front. You're just like another flashback.
A lot of text,
you know, lots of running around and getting to know sort of the world and where you're at. But that's so great because it does get you that story and get you attached to the characters. Some really fun kind of dungeons and bosses that you're crawling through and fighting even initially, though all your stuff is pretty basic at that point. But exploring like how Limit Breaks work is super great. Limit Breaks, if you're not familiar with the game, is sort of almost like a rage meter, not exactly, but like over time as your characters do more things and take more damage, they sort of get more and more fed up with the enemies, and then at some point are able to just do this crazy unique move specific to their character that just unleashes a ridiculous amount of damage in really creative ways. And you really get a good taste of all of the things that the game's going to offer. Only a taste, but through that whole introductory section. They do a good job.
I think my experience, to answer your question, Dustin, like going back and exploring the story again, so it's been a long time, and I thought I would kind of roll my eyes at some of the stuff just because like it's angsty at times. Cloud is an emo. Yeah. You know, it's just the series.
There's a few lines of dialogue that you have to roll your eyes at. You know,
for sure. Yeah, sure.
There's some of that kind of stuff. But that even adds charm to the game, honestly.
I'm fine with that. Like, I just expected to be like, okay, whatever. But honestly, 7 isn't that bad. Like, compare it to 10, to 10's story. That's a very, like, preteen, like, really, like, first love type of story and really corny, but still good and very, like, spiritual. This one is more so political, like, the plot, and there's just, like, it just goes into so much detail with the different factions, like the Turks and with Avalanche and like everything. There's like the flow stream, which is the mystical part or whatever, but still like the life stream. Yeah. And it just fits together though. And I was not rolling my eyes. I thought it was actually pretty mature for Final Fantasy, the series. So I enjoyed it. I didn't get very far. I got to Calm, so not far at all.
Yeah. But that's outside in the
it's a few hours though.
World. Oh, sure.
I mean, yeah.
And the things that you guys are mentioning is why I like RPGs so much and why Final Fantasy VII just did it for me, because I really feel like I'm playing a story. So, like,
absolutely.
I'm not playing first and foremost for graphics. I'm not playing first and foremost even for gameplay. Like, it's got me so into the story that it doesn't feel weird when my task is to get Cloud in a dress and a wig with some perfume. Like, it makes sense with the narrative at hand.
I mean,
That's why I like RPGs, because in action games you're doing action the whole time, or in like shooting games you're shooting the whole time. There's gonna be some story in there, but you're shooting the whole time. In Final Fantasy VII, you do battles. In Final Fantasy games, you do battles, but there's other stories, so you're doing other things and you're making other decisions. And so being able to do those things with a cast of characters that are so great and a story that is so deep. It hits it on every front for me and causes me to like it, not only long term, but this last week when we played it.
Aged.
So it's always interesting to have a conversation about something that's considered a classic when you're going back and looking at how well it aged, because sometimes that just lends itself to, I don't know, sort of like cheese or wine, like becoming better with time. And sometimes it's sort of like the farther away you get from it, the thing that was appealing about what made a game so great in the first point is less appealing. You know, there's some games that were wow graphics when they first came out and mind-blowing, you know, mechanically because you could do some new thing, and then you go back and play it and and you've surpassed those benchmarks so long ago that there's not that like initial appeal. And that's something you got to watch, but I don't think that's something this game struggles from too much. The graphics, even being, you know, a little bit older, are still visually appealing. They're pretty. They make sense for the game. They fit the style and the tone. The music is absolutely mind-blowingly good.
Ridiculous.
You know, their use of similar motifs and tying things in and making you connect emotionally in the way they use music and story and cutscenes is so good. Like Dustin was saying, that the fact that so much of the game is about the story that you're going through and not just learning these cool mechanics and finding new armor and unlocking characters and all those things, but that you also get those things, as well as the fact that there is a huge amount of replayability. One, because it's just long and has some interesting content, but two, because there is so much side content that's interesting and unique and not there just to fluff up the game, but literally there to be enjoyable, from chocobos to the golden saucer to motorcycle races to, you know, flying an airship. Because this game sort of hit on all of those different marks, but not in ways that were gimmicky, but were like authentic, I think it holds up perfectly. It's one of those kind of games for me that going back and playing it makes me respect how good it was in its time even more. You know, like, the graphics aren't super, super high fidelity, but they're beautiful. You know, the music is absolutely stunning. The amount of story and the amount of hours you get out of gameplay, sure, it was like 3 discs, but considering the size of games anymore, you know, the fact that they even fit that amount of story and content on 3 discs, they just really created a gem, and it has held up well. For me, this is a wine game, not a you know, not a go back and regret it or rethink it kind of game.
And you mentioned that some of these like milestone games that people just have so much reverence for fall short as time goes on, just because your expectations aren't met again for the second time. And this game doesn't struggle, but I don't think Final Fantasy the series has ever struggled with that either. Like,
it's true.
You're pretty safe going back to most of the games in the series and being able to have an excellent gaming experience.
To a degree, if you're not really into the genre and you don't really like that super retro feel, even though it's one of my favorites, going back and playing 1 or 2 might be a little bit of a stretch for some
people. I'm just talking about those for who would take the time to go back, like who are fans of the series. So yeah, like it holds up. I agree with everything Kenny said. And also, I really do think it's just like a good book. There's so much to just consume, so much story to experience, that you can pick it up later and absolutely just smile as much, laugh as much, and get as emotional as you do when certain scenes happen. I totally understand Dustin's passion for the game, because not like, okay, it was his favorite game as a kid, but it was also his introduction to gaming, pretty much, like serious gaming. And Ocarina of Time wasn't that for me. It wasn't my introduction in that way. It was just my favorite game. But it's so important to so many people for a reason. Like, yeah, it was the first 3D one, so that's like the cool part of it. But no, that's not even, like, they didn't focus on, hey, look, a 3D Final Fantasy. They focused on content and story and characters, and that's why it's what it is.
So it's what you guys said. I think that if there are weak parts, it would be in the graphics and dialogue, but the dialogue is charming to me and
it
fits.
It almost adds to the appeal.
Yeah, at least some. But I could see where that could turn some people off.
It's a little cheesy at times.
Yeah. And then the graphics, at the time, everybody was like in awe. But some of the blockiness, you know, will remind you of maybe N64 slightly earlier, but that kind of like, you'll see a lot of polygons. But one of the things that I noticed this time that I usually don't, because I just try to immerse myself so fully in these kind of RPGs, the scenery that they created in the non-rendered scenes, so in the scenes you're actually playing, are actually very detailed. So I'm thinking specifically in that little playground area, and it's, when you think playground, you think light and frilly. It's not, but there's a slide and there's a swing, but there's art there and just background pieces that that are very, very pretty. And so I just really tried to focus this time in each different area, the artwork and the design that went into each of these areas, levels, and it's high, high quality. Even today, just a lot of love was clearly put into this game. And so graphics, like if you try to tell me the graphics are rough, then I'm just going to have to, I see where you're coming from, but I think you're just saying what you've heard before.
Yeah, yeah.
And so music is the best story. No other compares, and story is what really gets it for me. Though there are some re-releases of this game, and a few of the versions even have enhanced graphics. So with the Steam version, you have slightly enhanced graphics on the PC. And then let's just mention right here, the HD remake that I don't know if it will ever actually come out. That's going to be for PS4.
Like, yeah, it looks breathtaking, and like new gameplay too. Like, oh yeah, they're recreating different. It's crazy. Completely.
It's gonna be interesting. I don't know if it's gonna be like you tampered with something good and why, or if it's gonna be like, hey, thanks for the flashback and you know for it being pretty. And
I don't think it will.
But I think they'll be pretty honest to it.
Yeah, because you'll still always have the original to go play. It's not like it's going to kill your nostalgia or something.
Right.
And like add stuff. I really don't have the main story and the main flair and stuff. It will be hard for it to ruin, you know, things for me or for me to dislike it. It's Final Fantasy VII, my favorite game, being remade and reimagined. Yes. Mm-hmm. I'm about it.
No, it'll be great. All of that to say, as much as we have raved about everything, and we generally have, there are things that you might find a little frustrating. Some spaces where save states are really far apart. Some places where stuff feels a little bit repetitive in terms of an environment that you're in or the amount of running around you have to do. It is an excellent, excellent game, but by no means perfect, you know. But definitely one of those that it's those minor nuisances are so small compared to the quality of things that are provided. That it's definitely one of the best games of all time.
But do we, the three of us, give it our vote for New Game Plus status? Maybe, maybe not. Let's find out.
The final shell shock.
All right, so I'll start. Final Fantasy VII is not only a great game, it's truly one of the best video games of all time. And it's because of this game that I like good stories. It is because of this game that I like true depth in characters. It's because of this game that I like humongous swords. It's because of this game that I like games, at least in part. I don't know if I would have been as much into gaming if we would have started a gaming podcast, if we would have done any of this, if it wasn't for Final Fantasy VII. And playing it this past week brings just as much joy to me as the first time that I played it. And so for me, it absolutely receives my vote for New Game Plus status 7 times over.
Ah, wow. I love that it means that much to you. It's not my favorite Final Fantasy. It's the second time I've played it was this week, which I've played like 6, even 4 multiple times, but for some reason I never revisited 7. One, because I didn't have it on the console. But now that it's on Steam, there's really no excuse. It's so cheap. You should play it. If you haven't, please just play it. I mean, you've heard what we've said. It's all true. You will hear many other people say the same thing. And the critics of the game just don't like it. They prefer other Final Fantasies. But I'm not going to like bash this one because I like 9 or 13 better. Right. It's actually low on my list of favorite Final Fantasies, but that just speaks to the series being so good. It's not on the low end, but there's like 5 in front of it. Okay, chill out, Dustin.
I still don't know about that. As long as it's in the top 5 of people that actually play Final Fantasies, I'm okay with that. I was looking just this week, and I think IGN has it as number 9.
As all
number
time?
9.
Oh,
a
Final Fantasy.
Do you
Fantasies?
Know what they have as number 2? Final Fantasy 12.
No.
You know, like I think they just guessed. Like
that's
a
backwards list.
They
I mean,
just
I think
dice.
They
just guessed.
Everyone's list of Final Fantasy series will be different.
Oh sure,
absolutely, because the games are so wildly diverse and they're all so good that they all are going to be competitive and all are going to appeal to some people.
And 7, wherever it ranks on your list, has an asterisk by it because there's just it's a special, special game across gaming in general. Also. Yes, I give it a game plus.
Okay, awesome. So Dustin does, Nolan does, Kenny?
At this point, my response doesn't matter because 2 out of 3.
Well, let's move on.
Yeah, which means I'm not going to waste my time. I clearly like this game. I've talked a lot about it. It was also influential for me. And so instead of giving New Game Plus, I will brag about my favorite Final Fantasy memory that I ever had. Not instead of giving it New Game Plus. Instead of telling you why I'm about to give it New Game Plus. As a kid, I thought I was going to be really, really hard. As in, like, tough as a gamer. If when you got to the Midgar Zolom, you know, the way you're supposed
to... And you
could beat him? The way you're supposed to get by that is to, like, unlock chocobos, and that's what introduces that important aspect of the game to you. Yeah. That we were going to run through that that swamp, kill him to see what happened instead of dying to him, and then continue to run through and get to the cave. And I did it.
It's doable, but it's way too much grinding, man.
It's a ridiculous amount
of
grinding.
What level do you have to be?
I don't even remember, but we're
you're
talking...
you're not that high right there.
No, there's not a lot, and once you get like somewhat out of leveled past like the content of creatures, like the grinding slows way, way down. Right. You have to really be committed, and even then the fight has to go really well in terms of the skills that you have and like what things he has that hit you and how quickly you kill him, and it is insanely difficult to do, and I thought I was a boss as a kid so much that 20-some years later... I am still bragging about that accomplishment.
You're so hard, Kenny.
I know.
That's great. Yeah, this week I just ran right past the Midgar Zolom, so that's another tactic.
It works. We weren't smart enough to realize you could just use his pathing to like, beat the system.
So we got a lot of responses this week via email, Twitter, Facebook from our viewers who played this game with us. Thank you guys for playing. I won't be able to read them all. We will respond to all of them, but just not live on the show because we just have so many. But we will focus on our close friends that connect with us weekly on Discord and support us via Patreon. So Jan, let's start with you. The combination of pre-rendered scenes and rendered players and characters is slightly odd. I bet it looked great at the time, but today it's a bit weird. There were times where I walked onto a new screen and immediately walked off because the camera turned 180 degrees.
Yeah.
Also, the battle animations are pretty low frame rate. Other than that, they did a great job and it adds characters to the game. The battles are great. The limit breaks are cool. The materia system sounds interesting. After playing this tiny part of the game, I can see a story is being set up. Like in other Final Fantasy games, it's exciting and I want to know more. I'm going to see if I can finish the game. So I think this game deserves New Game Plus status. It's a great game.
Absolutely. If you haven't played through it, commit, do yourself a favor and put in the time. You'll thank us.
That's the thing. These games take time and it really brings you back down to earth when you try to play it, and a set amount of time you're like, I hate being adult. I can't do this.
That's right. I forgot how much time this took me to get through this numerous times, you know?
Right. Yeah, and it's hard because like right now, I've even mentioned this to both of you probably, that I really want to go through and play my favorite five Final Fantasies again, but my age and life now, like I just don't honestly know if that's possible unless
you
just break
it. Nights.
Well, I think it would take longer than a year, not because that's how long the games take, but I mean, just with the time that I'd be able to invest into.
Absolutely.
And I don't play these games just and finish a story. Like I'm a completionist, so I try to do every single thing. So thank you, Jan, for your email. Antonin also emailed us. When the game was picked, I was worried that the graphics and gameplay would feel ancient. But my worries were, this is the word, assuaged.
Close.
Kenny?
What does that mean?
When I was thrown into the first mission to destroy one of the reactors and saw the beautiful pre-rendered backdrops and the music that put me into the story, I actually miss that art style. Modern games still have those pre-rendered backgrounds, but usually they're just faraway landscapes. The initial story felt a little linear, but when I finally got the overworld map, it was like I found the promised land.
Yep.
This guy.
The game lost linearity and I felt like I could... truly explore the world of Final Fantasy VII. I did not get far, but the fact that I had a lot of fun with the game from the second I booted it up was quite an achievement. I can't say that about other games that we played so far, not Chrono Trigger, not Atlantis, and not even Doom. The pacing was fantastic with parts that were all about action and parts where the characters helped unravel the storyline with calm discussions and flashbacks. I hope this next game is a bad one so that I don't feel tempted to stop playing Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah.
Gives you the excuse to get all the way through it.
Yeah. this is going to be one of the games that I keep playing, and I mean, that's no surprise, but I'm probably not going to beat it again, but I've learned to at least speedrun the first disc, and so that's kind of what I was doing this week to enjoy it, and so I'll probably do a little bit more of that because it's just so much fun.
Yeah, for sure.
Zion emailed us. He said, I thought this game was going to be good. After all, I voted for it. What I didn't realize is how long it was after the first 3 hours. I thought I could beat it until I looked up the speedruns for this game. There's no way I'm going to beat this game. That being said, this game was one of the better games I've played this year, though it was no Zelda. P.S. There is a remake of the game coming out, and it looks good. I hope you all give it New Game Plus.
You get your wish.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, there's no telling when that game will come out, though. If we're looking at Final Fantasy 15, like, that game's been promised for, like, 6 years, and they just don't get it.
And let's be real. If you're going to compare it to something and say it's not as good as it, a franchise like Zelda is one of the few that we will let you get away with doing that.
Definitely, definitely. All right, and then finally we received an email from Bill.
Bill, what's up?
Everything about this game is perfect. I agree.
Look, he's in your camp, Dustin.
From the first scene where you flip off the top of a train to go blow up a reactor to the way that they teach you how to fight and use the magic system is expertly crafted to teach by example rather than overly drawn out tutorials. The characters are immediately interesting and demand your emotional investment. The magic system is my personal favorite to date of any RPG. The music that plays after every victory is memorable as is nearly every other music track that you'll hear. As for the plot, I know this game has a scene that I'll never forget. And watching some of the other viewers in Discord play it this week for the first time, all I could do was hope that they would reach the end of Disc 1. If you've played this game this week, I encourage you to keep playing it until the end. The game is such a masterpiece, as I'm sure the three guys have spent the whole podcast expressing. In my mind, it is flawless. It has aged beautifully, and the polygonal characters are not a deterrent at all. I look forward to the next game, and to anyone listening, join the Discord server. You're missing out on some awesome stuff. Also, support the guys in Patreon. Their bonus content is worth it.
Man, thanks so much.
Awesome. Thanks for the plug, Bill.
Man. You're the best.
He saves us from having to invite people and tell them those things.
Right, right.
And go look at Bill's content. He is a whiskey connoisseur. You should go watch his videos.
He posts YouTube, high-quality YouTube videos. They're great. But you'll be able to find out more about that on our Discord channel.
You will. And I just want to stress, like, how easy it is to access Discord. It's free. You can use it on mobile. And it's super, like, it's user-friendly.
Super lightweight too.
Really lightweight. Your phone's not going to slow down or anything. Right. Get the app and talk with us because we have a lot of fun. Like this week, we shared screenshots of our progress in Final Fantasy, and I'm sure Dustin was in heaven. So please get on Discord. It's awesome.
And as Bill mentioned, Patreon is this we mentioned at the start of this episode. This is one of our special Patreon pools. We try to do this every 5 episodes or so, where the pool of randomly selected games from our Retro Master list is brought down significantly. And at our last recording, we grabbed those games. I think there were 10, maybe a dozen games that were suggested from our viewers that support us at that level. And we randomly selected from those games. Thankfully, the greatest game of all time was selected. And that's why we played Final Fantasy VII this week.
It is always a nice change. It's fun for our patrons to have some say in the games that we want to play, whether for good or for bad. How they use that power is up to them. But it's also neat to have kind of a more curated experience. You know, sometimes we get such varied games quality-wise just randomly picking from this kind of vast list. And there's fun in that. There's adventure in that, in going into things we don't know blind. But those episodes are fun when we get a chance to play something that people specifically want to see us play. So if you want to be a part of that, easy to do. Hit up patreon.com and support New Game Plus podcast, and we'd love to have you be a part of the next Patreon pool.
Yeah, and if you are a huge Final Fantasy fan, just in general, and care about what my top 5 favorite Final Fantasy games are of all time, then one of the levels on our Patreon page allow you access to secret episodes, which there may or may not have been a secret episode from yours truly this week, revealing my top 5 favorite Final Fantasy video games of all time.
Good job, Dustin. It's not a secret episode anymore. You've talked about it.
I didn't say anything.
I'm going to hit that up. I'm curious to know what your top 5 are. I could probably guess.
support us and you'll find out. We're going to randomly select our next video game that is going to take time away from us playing more Final Fantasy VII. It is from our Retro Master list. You'll find the links to that on our social media. Hey, Dallas, our old school friend Dallas emailed us this week with more game suggestions.
How many? 30?
I honestly haven't even opened 60? The email yet. They scare me.
I feel like 40% of the Retro Master list, if not more, is suggestions from Dallas, and we love it. Thanks for sending those in.
I think he did it after our Power Rangers episode, which I hope it's just a list of like 24 Power Ranger games.
No,
it probably
we won't
is.
Have them. We're done. I'm making that call.
Find the link to our Retro Master list on our social media. In the meantime, we'll randomly select from that great list and find out what game we'll be playing for the next 7 days. And it is...
Menu selections.
So good. It is a totally different game from the one that we played this week. We are going to be playing an arcade game that was developed and published by Namco in Japan in 1982.
Sounds good.
And it is called Dig Dug.
Yes. Heck yes.
Old school.
Old school. And it's a really fun one. I think I had this one for Game Boy, and it was it was one of the better ones. A really good game.
Yeah, it's so fun. It's a great arcade game.
So a very light game after a week of a very heavy game. But
yeah.
Make sure to join with us. Play with us this week. Find a copy of Dig Dug. That will be extremely easy. And then send us in your thoughts. You can do that via Twitter or Facebook at NGP Podcast. You can email us ngppodcast@gmail.com or hop into our Discord channel, which we have mentioned multiple times now. As always, you can listen to us directly on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Music, or any other podcast provider. Subscribe so that you are the first to get new NGP episodes. If you're interested in that bonus content that Bill was talking about, or those secret episodes which Kenny let out, you know, patreon.com/NGP podcast.
As always, thanks to all of our patrons who support us on a monthly basis. You guys help us to keep going strong. And especially big thanks to those who are supporting us at the producer level. Bradley and Zion, you guys are great. Looking forward to another really fun week of retro gaming with you guys. And definitely hope to have your input however you connect with us.
Join us next week as we play Dig Dug. Until then, I am Cloud Strife.
I am riding a gold chocobo.
I'm Nolan and Normal.
Y'all could have picked characters like Nolan. You're clearly Vincent, Kenny.
Don't say it. It's not true.
I won't. Kenny, you're...
I'm a little bit Sid.
Sid?
Yeah, don't act
Kenny
like I'm
not
Yuffie. Sid.
Kenny is Yuffie. Hey, I'll take that.
Can I be Aeris,
by the way,
guys?
If you're curious, my primary party late game is Cloud, Yuffie, and Sid. Thank you for listening to this very special and super long episode of New Game Plus. We'll see you next week.